This is Booth 46, live from Petorino's. Not just in the heart of the Loop, but the heart of the Loop. Surrounded by theater, culture, and Chicago's movers and shakers. Each episode brings you, as Irv Kupcinet used to say,
the lively art of conversation.
Local vibes, real conversations, and fresh ideas for experiencing the city. So pull up a chair, lean in, and let's dive into the stories that shape Chicago.
This is so exciting. It's always exciting from Booth 46, Petorino's restaurant. But right here, right now, it's Mr. David Byrne, ladies and gentlemen.
People are applauding, and I'm sitting in a booth in a restaurant.
Isn't that great?
That is the weirdest thing ever.
Well, you know, this is kind of a throwback to when up in Chicago, there was a guy by the name of Irv Kupcinet, who at some point in time did a broadcast from the Pump Room restaurant.
Right, I've heard of that place.
Yeah, and his guest would be like, here's Gore Vidal, he would introduce him, and then Frank Sinatra would be there, he'd introduce them, and he'd have two or three people at the same time who were not associated with one another, and it was what he called the lively art of conversation. So you and I are about to have...
Well, okay, okay.
The
so
lively
that's
art.
Where it originated,
yeah.
The idea of...
Yeah, yeah. So I will say this. David Byrne, I've got this written out, so if you don't mind, I'll read it. David Byrne is the co-founder and front man of the groundbreaking band Talking Heads. Not everyone may know this stuff, so I'm reading it.
Okay.
Mr. Byrne studied art at the Rhode Island School of Design, where he met future bandmates. He is known for blending punk rock, world music, art rock, and the band produced influential albums like Remain in Light, Fear of Music, and Speaking in Tongues, and made history with the concert film Stop Making Sense, directed by Jonathan Demme. Am I okay so far?
So far, so good.
Okay. Mr. Byrne, I'm almost done, is a prolific author, both of personal anecdotal books, but also books about artwork, where you feature artwork of yours in the book. You founded the label Luaka Bop to introduce global artists to a wider audience, which we'll talk about because I'm interested in that. You've done stage work like American Utopia, which blends music, choreography, and visual storytelling. And that's been adapted into concert film that you happen to do with a guy by the name of Spike Lee. All right?
So far, so good.
Okay, one more sentence. And
yes,
then we can...
we're catching
okay,
up here.
Yeah, I know. And now, a new concept in theater called... Theater of the Mind in Chicago. That's at 333 North LaSalle Street, and it now runs through mid-July or longer than that, and you promised not to burn down that house.
That is correct. Yeah,
now,
no.
Let me ask you a couple of questions about Theater of the Mind. I can try to describe it.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you went through it, because... Now that's your job.
Oh no. That's too much pressure. It is like something that will blow your mind. And it is something like I go to theater all the time. I'm a big theater junkie. And this is like nothing I've ever seen before. It clearly has to do with your fascination, I think, of the mind.
Yes. Yes, I'm forever wondering, why do we do that? Why do we think like that? Why do we, you know...
How did I get here?
He's got it. He's got the script.
Bill Murdoch, the engineer,
yes,
always
but
has
sir, the but it's serious, too. It's like, yes, why do we do the things that we do?
And that's
why
what
are we the way that we are? I've always asked. We all ask
so
those
you,
kind of questions.
So when you walk into the theater, you walk in, you're not alone. You're with about 12, 15 other people or so.
Exactly.
And they're strangers. You don't know them. But you're going to know them, some of them anyway, a little bit by the time the show is done. Because it's all interactive. There's no pressure on people to, like, jump up and down and do strange things to participate.
Yeah, there's none of that, oh, you have to perform or we're going to embarrass you in front of everybody.
Nothing like that.
There's none of that stuff.
However, it is, and you have a new identity. When you walk into, I think I was Jovan, when you walk into the theater, and a guy pops out. I don't want to give anything away, so I have to be careful. And I'll almost stop here in describing. A guy pops out of a coffin whose name is David. Is that coincidence that his name is David?
It's not a coincidence. I had second thoughts about that, but it sort of works out fine because he's dead.
You're not.
I'm not.
I hope.
And yes, we see, because it's a funeral, we see a childhood picture, which happens to be my childhood picture.
Uh-huh.
So it goes from there.
Okay.
So, all right. So I'll add, this is in the vaguest terms, yes, you go through a series of rooms, it's about seven rooms, I think.
Uh-huh.
You get a new identity, you get these name tags on you. Hello, my name is whatever. And it's random. You don't get to pick who you are, what gender you are, or anything. And the actor, the character, you are old friends and acquaintances and work buddies and whatever with this person. So they know you by that name. And they'll refer to you occasionally like, do you remember when we did this?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember what you did to me? Do you remember? And the rest of the audience will look at you like, well, did you do that? Yeah. So it's kind of surprising how fast that all kind of snaps into...
People accept it.
People accept it. So, yes, it's immersive. There's effects. There's things that you see that are kind of strange.
Well, I don't want to go into detail with the effects.
But there's a story. There is a story.
There is, yeah.
There's a story.
And throughout, before you come to the end of that story, you play, David does, the show does, mind games with the audience. And you use your mind in a way, and you think about things maybe you didn't think about before.
I hope so. Yeah, that's...
Is that part of the intent of the show?
That's part of the intent, yeah, that you... Some of the things might be familiar, but overall, we hope that it will encourage people to kind of look at themselves and look at things in a new way.
Now, this is a production of the Goodman Theater. Again, it's at 333 North LaSalle Street, and you worked with Susan Booth, who is their director.
Artistic director.
Thank you. That's better.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you for that. Brilliant mind herself, actually, I believe, at the Goodman Theater. How did you come to know her, and how did this all come about?
We did the show in Denver a few years ago, and word got out amongst...
So this was kind of a trial run that you did in Denver?
No, it was, well, in a sense, if it completely failed, yes, then we would have said it was a trial and it failed. But it didn't. People liked it. So, word got around.
And you brought it to Chicago.
Yes, I mean...
Why Chicago?
Why? I mean, people have heard of the Goodman, you know, beyond Chicago.
Absolutely.
So, they've heard of it. And so, yeah, we thought, oh, man, that would be amazing. It's not going to be in the Goodman, but the fact that it's under that umbrella, all that, I thought... That would be pretty amazing.
And it's right down the street, actually, from the Goodman Theater.
Yeah, it's only just a few blocks away, It's right in the loop.
And you mentioned that you go through seven different rooms. You have to find the right space to do that has seven different rooms to go through.
Yes, you can't do it in a conventional theater.
And a guy by the name of Mr. Friedman, I believe, helped you to do that.
Yes, there's a man that helped us.
Yeah, he is... If you need help in Chicago, knock on his door.
And oh, really?
Maybe I shouldn't say that because
I'll remember that. Yeah,
everyone will be knocking on his door forever. But if he believes it's good or a good idea, then now there's details on the set, and you actually walk through the set of the show. For example, I noticed that there was a book on the bookshelf by David Lynch. Because you're walking through various rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Did you help create every detail of the set? And if so, does it mean something? Do all of those details mean something?
No, I did not oversee every single detail. There are prop people and design people and all that who I work with. And they understand the concept. They understand what we're going for. And then, so that unleashes their creativity.
American Utopia, which appeared on Broadway, and it appears currently, I think people can find it and stream it.
Yes, with Spike, HBO, yeah, some other platforms too. Mm-hmm.
Spike Jonze directed that.
Spike Lee, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. And does this kind of, is this sort of in some ways a follow-up to American Utopia?
This show? No. I'm currently on a concert tour as well, and that has elements of American Utopia in it.
And by the way, I will say this. I hadn't listened. That was, what, 2019 maybe? Somewhere
yeah,
in there?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Right. I hadn't listened to the music since then or 2020. Now, because during the pandemic I did. Now, I just went, just to do homework before I talked to you, I went back and listened to some of the music. And it's still, I mean, it's available on iTunes or Spotify or wherever people get their music. And it stands up today.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Would you have liked to have seen, there was the pandemic that hit you, I suppose.
The pandemic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would it still be running, you think, if there were no pandemic?
No, I think it would have run longer continuously without the pandemic. But the pandemic interrupted it by about 2 years. It was like a two-year pause button.
Yeah.
And then we went back into a different Broadway theater, and it ran there. And then after a while, I was like, I think I have to get a life and move on from this.
I've talked.
We could have continued it, but I thought with the pandemic in there, it's been like, I don't know, 5 years doing this thing.
So, what is more grueling, Broadway or being on a world tour? It's a question I've talked to many performers about how grueling Broadway is, but I've not asked the question of a rock star.
Okay,
so you tell me.
It's really different. Obviously, on Broadway, once it's up and running, you go to work in the evening at, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 o'clock, and you're done by 10:30, and you go home. That part sounds pretty nice. But some days you have two shows, and you got to go there every day, except you get one day a week off. So it is a lot of work, but you live at home. So if you have a family, if you're married, anything else, that part is pretty good. And the other part is, on Broadway, they come to you. But I'm on a tour, I'm going to them.
Good point, yeah.
And, which is fun. It's fun. I did a bunch of shows at, what's it called, the auditorium, the big auditorium.
In Chicago? Or?
Yeah, that one.
Auditorium Theater?
Auditorium Theater, that's right, a few months ago. So it was great. I mean, it's a great, great place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good to be here.
And you're coming back as soon as possible, I hope.
Yes.
Yeah. I hope so. So when you go into these cities, do you still hop on your bicycle and go from place to place to place on a bicycle? And I'm referring to, in part, the book that I have in front of me called Bicycle Diaries, where you write about how in every city just about that you've hit, you hop on a bicycle, your bicycle, and how these various cities are different, and you comment on the cities and such as well. Do you still do that?
Yeah, I still do that. It's when I'm on a music tour, yes, we carry a whole bunch of bikes, folding ones.
Yeah.
So they fit in the luggage department. We get somewhere and we take them out and we go explore for some hours before we have to go to work, which is pretty nice. Started doing that years ago, and I feel like it stopped me from going crazy.
How so?
From losing my mind. You know, you can imagine when musicians spending their time between a hotel room, backstage, on stage, and then drinking with friends or whatever. After a while, everything starts to meld together and it all feels the same. And I thought, no, I want to know where I am, what place I'm in.
And get, you know,
get a sense of it.
I have said that you get the same sort of thing by walking a city.
Yeah.
But you can do it a lot faster on a bicycle, of course. What is the... you've written about some challenging cities that you've been to on a bicycle, particularly Manila was one example.
Yes. Yeah. My friends in Manila said, "What? You're going to bike around here?"
Well, their streets are... I've never been to Manila, but I've been to other cities in that part of the country. There's no room for anybody or anything. And there are a lot of bicycles, but they have their own rules, it seems.
Yeah, so you have to learn their rules. There's some places that are really beautiful. There's a long kind of promenade along the bay that's really nice. But there's other parts where it is, it can be pretty crazy.
And tell me about how that went.
I enjoyed it.
Did you?
Yeah.
The best city to bicycle in America?
In America? Wow.
Have you bicycled yet in Chicago?
Oh, yeah.
So we have become more bike-friendly, and you wrote this book, A Bicycle Diaries, several years ago. So, and you write at the very beginning of the book about how challenging many cities are to bike in. Have you found cities, I will use Chicago as an example, bike lanes everywhere, in every neighborhood?
Yeah, it's much easier and much nicer than it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really different. You still got to pay attention. There are some places where Copenhagen or Amsterdam or someplace where bikes rule. But even there, it wasn't always that way. That's something that...
Is America kind of catching up, you think?
Yeah. There's towns where it's catching up.
You live in New York City?
I live in New York City.
Tell me about New York and biking.
There's a lot of bike lanes.
Yep.
The scariest thing are the bike messengers.
I believe.
The guy and the delivery guys. Because they're kind of going on the bike lanes the wrong way. They don't stop at red lights and all that kind of stuff. And my feeling is that's because they're paid by delivery,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to being paid like an hourly wage. And so they are just racing to get as much done as they possibly can.
So in the book, you also talk about the karaoke machines. We were talking about Manila, that are in Manila and other cities
as
well.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. So here's my question. Have you ever stopped? Because now on YouTube, here's what you see. You see a busker, a street performer, or I don't even know what you call them. They're more than street performers because they have their own YouTube pages. They sometimes actually appear. By the way, I'm going to stop myself in midstream. What is coming now is the most important thing you've ever experienced, even in your life, David Byrne. That would be peppermint ice cream from Pedrino's Restaurant.
Wow.
You have to taste it? Yeah, there we go. You've done thousands of radio interviews, right? At least.
Probably.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Have you ever had applause for peppermint ice cream before?
Never.
All right.
Never.
So you have to try
Never.
It well.
It's a first.
Well, I talk, and then I'll get back to
okay,
my questions.
Okay, you keep talking.
I'm going to talk about Chicago's downtown theater district, where Pedrino's is located, adjacent to the Goodman Theater, which isn't far from where you are performing. And summer is around the corner. Summer Sips in the Loop will be 2 to 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. to close Monday through Friday. And by the way, live music heard here, generally jazz music. I want to talk to you about music. We haven't done enough of that. You can eat al fresco and...
There's a magic show.
There's a magic show right here.
I've seen that.
Have you? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those... It's what do they call it? Up-close magic mostly?
Uh-huh. Dennis Watkins.
Yeah, amazing. And of course, he does something and you go, how did he do that? Is that possible?
I know.
That's what they do.
I know it. So the patio is open and it's dog friendly as well.
Mm.
That's a good thing. And that is Pedrino's Restaurant downtown in Chicago. It is the heart of Chicago. Okay, I was talking to you about karaoke. And on YouTube now, there are a whole lot of people that are performers, but they're buskers, kind of, but they've their own YouTube page, they have their own audiences and such, and a wide variety of artists, everyone from Jennifer Hudson to, I'm trying to think of some of the others that have stopped by, and very famously, he does this when he goes to different cities all over the country. I'm trying to think of his name, it'll come to me in a second. And he does this
He has the backing tracks, and then he sings over it?
Have you ever, or if you happen to have a guitar with you, have you ever performed at any of these or have done karaoke?
Oh, I've done karaoke with friends, yes.
And what would be your number one go-to karaoke song?
It seems inevitable. Last time I did it, I think I sang a Prince song, which was like, you're really going to try that? Yes, that is. Well, you think you can do that? Well.
Which song was it, do you know?
I think it was When Doves Cry.
Oh, yeah, well, gosh.
Which is not easy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, do you really think you did that?
Yeah. I thought, what are you thinking of? Yeah. But it seems like when people do karaoke, they often pick something that's a little bit of a stretch for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I did.
And how did it go?
It went fine.
Can we see that on YouTube anywhere? Probably not.
I don't think so.
Darn it, because I would pay money to see that, probably. So it's been said that you have said that people that are autistic have, and this is a quote, actually, that I believe people that are autistic have a superpower. This relates to in a very personal way. And I will tell you before I finish that when I read that quote, I thought of a friend of mine who is on the spectrum. He's brilliant. He's a genius. Mm-hmm. He is a genius. And sometimes communicates a bit differently, sometimes, but he is absolutely brilliant.
Well, you have to be clear, it's a spectrum. So there are people who are somewhat are not able to function normally.
Right.
They're at one end of the spectrum. But then there's people who just have a very mild version of it.
Is that you?
Less so now in my life, but I think when I was younger, yes, quite a bit. So I think it kind of calms down.
Is that something you can grow out of?
Maybe something like that, or maybe with experience, I learn how to deal with people socially a little bit better, I'm doing right now.
I think
I'm doing okay.
You're doing more than okay. Would it be, me, not so much, but you're doing okay.
Okay.
Would it be to compensate? Is that what you would say?
Sometimes. Or that sometimes it's just trying to understand, what did he mean when he said that? Because sometimes people say something and they don't mean literally what they say. And sometimes I'll interpret it literally.
Mm.
And that can lead to problems.
Potentially, yes.
Potentially. Yes.
It absolutely can. So I was listening to some of your music, and in the song Every Day is a Miracle, you sing about all sorts of things.
Chickens. A lot about chickens in there.
Yes. And elephants that don't read newspapers, and the private parts of donkeys. And, yes, a lot about the hot kiss of a chicken and more about chickens even. That dogs don't care if you happen to be the Pope, et cetera.
Yes.
What was the point of that, and is every day a miracle?
Well, the point of all those animals is to... Yeah, it's kind of serious. It's like your perspective, our perspective as humans, is not the only perspective in the world.
So can I name drop a little bit? Jane Goodall once gave me that same exact sentence.
And really?
Yes, really. And she said, as human beings, we too often forget that.
Yeah, that we are limited in our perception and our point of view. And but animals and birds and everything, all such other things, they have their own way of looking at things.
Well,
it's just as valid as ours. Yeah,
I totally agree. And name an animal. You mentioned donkeys.
Okay, octopus.
Okay,
there's a movie about octopus.
Yeah, indeed.
And how smart they are. Yeah.
Indeed, they are. And an octopus, actually, which has, I think, it's been a long time since I've talked octopus, so forgive me. But I think they actually have 9 brains. They have a brain in each of their appendages.
Oh, yeah. The arms
right?
can...
Yes.
If an arm gets chopped off, the arm will still do stuff.
Yeah. And also, they think independently, each arm, and the brain that they also have.
Yes.
So that's one additional brain.
Mm-hmm.
They're really smart about being an octopus. Name another animal. It doesn't matter which one. Any.
Crows.
Crows
can remember... people.
Who you are. Yeah.
Who you are. Yeah.
They remember faces. They're really smart about being who they are, as people are smart about being who they are as a species. Am I making any sense to you?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you follow what I'm trying to say?
I'm following you.
Yeah. So a chicken even, they're not so smart, but they're really smart about being chickens.
Yes.
They can do what they can do as a chicken, right?
Yes. In their chicken nests, they're doing okay.
I think so. You've also said that many U.S. cities are going to, and these are exact words, hell in a handbasket. Do you think so still?
What? Well, I was talking about specific cities.
Yeah, you said some U.S. cities in general. But what you did also say, I should add, Chicago is not one of them.
No, Chicago's not one of them. No, there. Well, this, in my opinion, let's say, there's infrastructure and kind of those kinds of issues that certain cities really need to deal with it. I mean, we know that there's cities like, I think Las Vegas is doing okay, but I think Phoenix and some other places, they are going to run out of water.
Mm-hmm.
Something, they got to figure something out. They're kind of draining the reservoir. The reservoirs are going down.
A lot of places in California.
Yeah. Places in California use that same water. And I thought, you can't have a city without water.
That would be a problem.
It would be a real problem. Yes. Yeah. And a lot of those cities, not as much Chicago or certain others, they gave themselves over to cars and highways and everything like that. And that kind of makes it harder, too.
Would you like to see less concrete?
I would like to see less concrete because if there were, let's say this restaurant we're in now, if there were acreage right next to it, it was just a parking lot, that's not really contributing anything. That's like storage space that's taking up values, you know, something where something could be happening there. You could have a store, a retail, an office, houses, whatever, but just to park cars.
Or a park.
Yeah, you could have a park.
Even better, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Or more bicycle routes.
Yes, more bicycles.
More bicycles. Have you done the Divvy bikes in Chicago?
No. What? Oh, that's
the blue bicycles?
I probably have. Not recently. I mean, last time I had my own bike here. But, yeah, I probably have done it in the past.
What if you and the mayor of the city, who bikes to work sometimes, if I organized a race between you two, a bike race?
I'm not into racing. I mean,
You're just into seeing what goes by and feeling the city?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not like, yes, I'm not in a race. There's people who do those long distance, like 100-mile bike rides and things like
that. So if you're performing in Buffalo and then performing in Chicago, you're not bicycling from Buffalo to Chicago?
No, sir.
Yeah.
I only did that once.
Did you? When?
Rode from, I think, Albany to Schenectady. It looked really close on the map.
All right, I did need to ask you. Oh, first of all, our chief engineer here, Bill Murdoch, wanted me to ask you. He said, thank you for playing Heaven, Life During Wartime, and This Must Be the Place on your tour.
Oh, thank you.
What determines... He's got a T-shirt to
prove it. He brought some merch. Yeah.
What determines... From what your extensive catalog is, what you play on a specific concert date?
Wow.
You're stumping him, Bill. That's not
good. Yeah. I'm lucky that I can kind of pick and choose stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, what's going to kind of tell the story that I want to tell in this show?
Mm-hmm.
I want to start with one idea and then kind of develop it and let it bring the audience on this kind of journey and go somewhere. And I stop and talk a little bit. Sometimes we'll go, no, that song doesn't fit. That doesn't fit. But
you've been touring for more than a couple of years. What still drives you?
It's a lot of fun. It's a challenge.
Is it the live audience?
Live audiences, you get a nice jolt of adrenaline from that, if they like you.
Do you guys like him?
Whoa! Yeah! That was not fair.
That's a yes.
All right, are you prepared for what I'm about to do? It's the questions.
Oh, these are the questions everybody gets asked?
Everybody.
All these people behind you?
All the
on
people.
On the wall there?
Yeah.
Have you asked them all these questions?
Yeah. Yep, and many more. All right. What is, David Byrne, the best job you've ever had?
The best job I ever had?
Mm-hmm.
I'm living it. It's the best one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the stuff I'm doing now, I wouldn't have dreamed that I would be doing these kind of things. Do I go for worst job?
No. That's actually the next question.
Oh, it is?
You read my mind, which clearly is light reading, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, okay, this is kind of truthful. The worst job I had was like being a janitor in a merchant seaman school in Baltimore. So you had to, like, clean up the halls of the school or whatever and everything, you know. And it was a night shift. You're on a night shift. Working on the night shift is... Maybe some people really like it because you're kind of on your own.
Yeah.
And so nobody's, like, on top of you. But it was kind of hard. And the...
How old were you, about?
I was probably around 20, 22, something like that.
You know what? It's just interesting to me how many people have had a worst job and what that worst job is. And people like Mr. Friedman, who's right here, who's responsible for, in part, Theater of the Mind, has said, just don't give up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you always know what you wanted to do?
No. No, I wanted to be... I knew at one point I went to art school. I didn't finish, but I knew that I wanted to make art of some sort or another. And...
Well, you've made art of every sort.
Back then, I had no idea that I could make a living with music. I thought, there's people that went to school for this. They're much better players than I am. They know all the theory. They know all that. I don't have a chance.
So what makes you you?
That is... I do not know that.
Who was your influence? Did you have any?
I had plenty of influences.
Tell me who.
I mean,
names we might know.
Yeah, some names we might
because
know.
Because you are so unique in what you do that the closest I could come was maybe David Bowie. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I totally admired him.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that he would change all the time, and I thought, that's something you can do. You can do that. You can get away with that. Other people did that too, where they would change their musical styles over from record to record or over the years. And I thought,
over the years, you do it by the minute. But is that a good thing or a bad thing? So, the music industry wants to say you are pop, that you are rhythm and blues or whatever.
Or, yeah, especially if you're successful, with it.
Yeah,
but I get that. I get that. But I mean, I was looking for myself and just thinking, no, it's allowed. You can do these different things, and there are people who have gotten away with it. Not that they're fooling people, but they've done okay doing that. Not that you have to do it. There's people. There's like I'm thinking like back in the day. There's say country artists, mm-hmm. country singers or whatever, and I go, I'd be happy if they did the same kind of songs forever and ever because I liked them so much.
Like who?
Like Hank Williams or George Jones or somebody like that. You just go, these people are so good
at doing what they do.
Doing what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go, I've decided, you know, I'm going to do a hip-hop record but with country... With country.
Are you going to do that?
That's going to happen. That's going to... Not me. That's going to happen. Somebody's going to do that.
Did you work recently with Olivia Rodrigo?
Yes, I did.
Tell me about that.
She reached out to me, or her people did initially.
Of course.
I think... was that it? No. I got invited to go see her show when she was in town. I went to see it, and then and they said, "Do you want to go say hi afterwards?" And I said, "Well, sure. I really like it. Her songs are really good, and they're funny, and yeah, and she's great.
Great pipes too.
Yeah, great pipes too.
Yeah.
So I went and said hi, and she was like a normal person, and there was like no, you know, I thought, oh, there's going to be a big line of celebrities or whatever. Not so much. Not really. And I thought, well, this is really nice. We got to talk for a little bit. So anyway, she reached out and then after that and said, hey, you know, I guess she thought I was like a human being too. And will you join me when I'm doing another show in New York? Sing a song. Uh-huh. We do a song together. So, yes. So we stayed in touch.
All right, let me get back to my questions.
That's a surprise to people, I think.
Yep. Say that again?
That was a surprise to people,
why?
I think.
Why do you think?
Well, she's just a little bit younger than I am. Just
really?
A little bit.
What makes you the happiest?
What makes me the happiest?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. I guess when something surprises me, when I manage to do something and it surprises me, and then I can pull it off. And that could be just cooking something, and you go, "Whoa, hey, that tastes pretty good. I didn't know I could do that." Yeah.
The best thing for you about Chicago?
The best thing about Chicago?
The best.
Wow. I think people here have a very specific kind of sensibility and attitude. That's... It's not.
What is
there's
the,
some great buildings here, but I think it's the people that are.
What makes?
Yeah.
Again, you get. So, what is it about the people?
I don't know. They feel very real. They feel very real. They're not like.
As are you
trying to be something?
As are you. What a pleasure it is to talk to you. Theater of the Mind, 170 North Dearborn Street in Chicago. Presented by the Goodman Theater. And, of course, it's the one and only David Byrne. The show blew my mind. Thank you very much, David Byrne, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You so much. Thank you. That was fun. And I got some ice cream. I got dessert before dinner.
Well, that's how it always should be, I think.
That's a wrap from Booth 46 at Pederino's, where the loop comes to life. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, keep the conversation going and keep exploring Chicago.